Welcome to another episode of the Choose Your Soul Show. My name's Hakeem.
My name is Alyssa.
And we are passionate about providing resources and perspective to help you choose yourself and strengthen your soul and contribute to the authenticity amongst the collective. Come on now. Every week, we got a special guest to help you GYM, and that's grow your mind. Because you owe your mind to get to know your mind, to control your mind, and console your mind. It'll blow your mind every time. Come on now, y'all. This week, we got Miss Brianna. Brianna or Brianna? We're going to get Brianna. It right today. Brianna, that is. 3-time business owner and a women's empowerment mentor specializing in holistic healing, anxiety, burnout, and limiting beliefs to create thriving careers, relationships, and financial freedom. Whoa, damn. She started her first business at 22, sold it for over 6 figures by 30. Mm-mm. Her teachings and modalities combine science and spirituality, such as breath work, meditation, mindset work, somatic healing, microdosing, psilocybin, and a bunch of other shit. So we're going to bring her ass on. Come on, Brianna. Thank you for joining us. You look great. Do you feel as good as you look?
Yeah, I feel awesome. How about you guys?
We're always great.
Growing and growing. We got Miss AF on the line, you know, as always, holding it down.
I'm so excited for this conversation. I love your background because it's everything that I'm obsessed with too. So I'm excited to learn from you. And if you're listening to this episode, make sure that you subscribe and share it to your platforms. Tag us at the Choose Your Soul Show on Instagram. Leave us a rating. It's always very helpful to get the word out. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey to this point? You have such an amazing background. And what were you doing before you got into business and spirituality? And are there any juicy awakening stories that we should know about?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for asking. I'm so happy to be here. As you said, I started my first business at 22. And prior to that, I had just graduated from the University of Delaware with a degree in English and concentration in journalism and business writing. And so in 2015, shortly after graduating, with just $10 in my pocket, I went to the dollar store and I purchased some spray bottles, baking soda, and vinegar. And with that, I started an all-natural house cleaning service from bottom up. Yeah. And then I created... Thank you. And then with my business experience from school, I created the logo, the website, the social media, the marketing. And within the first month, I hired my first employee. By the second month, I hired my second. And by the third, I hired my third. And it really just took off from there. I had always been a spiritual person, but the experience of starting and running a business alone and from the ground up was such a spiritual experience for me, like more challenging and expanding than any medicine ceremony, especially because over that time we did a lot of community work. We donated profits to plant trees. We provided free cleanings to cancer patients, community cleanups, free DIY workshops for low-income communities. So for me, the experience was a testament to having a vision and seeing it through, regardless of the obstacles or the doubts. And it was also a testament to what they call right livelihood in Buddhism, which is the spiritual belief that the work that we're doing doesn't harm others and contributes to the overall well-being of all. To me, a business isn't always just about making money. The purpose was and is to serve others, and the money will come. That's what spirituality is, right? Finding purpose and meaning outside of yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it, you know. You really have to tap into your spirituality to start a business, because you got to find what your gift is in order to do that. Rip down of your dependencies and vices in the societal norm. And then when you're alone building it, like you were with the squirt bottle and the vinegar and baking soda, all the self-doubt and limited beliefs creep up. Like, am I doing the right thing? But you got to stay in tune with your purpose and what drove you there. And, you know, kudos to you. Impressive.
Thank you. Maybe if people around you don't believe in you, and just like really overcoming not only your own limiting beliefs, but the judgment of others or misunderstandings from others.
Yeah, I literally just posted about this the other day myself too, because I said the same thing. Being a business owner and getting into entrepreneurship is literally the most spiritual journey that you can go on because of the limiting beliefs. You have to face your own issues. Like look at yourself in the mirror and be like, okay, why am I not making it? Especially In 2024, we have all the tools that we need at our fingertips. Like, it's so easy to start and build a business compared to 50 years ago when you had to do everything door to door and like handwrite everything and call people on the phone. It's like we have everything in the magic mirrors in our palms of our hands. So it's like, why aren't you making it? There's no reason why you can't. There's so many people becoming millionaires so quickly these days. Like, you can become a millionaire within 1 year, where before it would take you 20, 30 years building something, right? So it's like, why aren't you making it? If you want to, you can. You have everything you need, but it's something in your brain that's holding you back. Some limiting belief, some programming you got from childhood, something around worthiness or that you can't do it, or some belief system. And it's like, you have to look at all that stuff and be like, what inside of me is holding me back? Because it all just comes down to you. Like, you're the problem if you're not making it. So, which... it's kind of like harsh to say, but it's true because we have everything we need.
Fuck it. We harsh on here. They don't call me Harsh Hakeem for nothing. Listen, find your passion, do some research. Okay. And then find a way to contribute whatever that is into a void in the market and in humanity. Basic.
And I think it's important to touch on what you said too. It's not really about the money. It's about the value that you bring and the way that you're helping people. And the money is just a byproduct. So if you're starting a business, like, sure, maybe you are in a financial crisis and you need to make money quickly, but if you just, and I know it's hard to do when you are in that situation because you need to live your life and like have your necessities, but focus on the value that you're providing and the people that you're helping. And the money is just a byproduct of that. So if you can focus on what the purpose is, why you're starting something, it's like the money will just start rolling in if you just focus on the good and how you can help people. And it's funny when you start doing that, like take the focus off the money, it does start rolling in faster as opposed to putting so much focus on it, because then you're kind of sitting in a lack mentality and like scarcity, like I need it. The desperation keeps it away from you in a way.
Right. Cause then you're like chasing it instead of calling it in and attracting it.
Yes. We don't chase, we attract. What were some pivotal moments that shaped your approach to mentorship in business throughout, you know, from when you started to now?
There's been so many. I think with the big thing that was a pivotal moment for starting my business was my last semester of college. The university where I went had signed a 75-year lease to build a multi-billion dollar natural gas power plant. And so with my journalism skills and passion for activism, I had spearheaded a student movement to help stop them from building it. And I created social media campaigns, which then I applied to my business later. I created petitions, organized protests, marketed them, invited the media, basically created a PR campaign nightmare for them, which I later could apply positively for my business. And people asked me, you're a senior and you're leaving, why do you care? Or people told me, you'll never stop the project, so why try? But we did. And then a few weeks after graduation, they announced they terminated the lease. And this experience really ignited a fire in me that forged me to become a very vocal advocate for the environment and sort of a walking embodiment of what I saw to be as ethical business. And then after graduation, I was a freelance journalist and I learned about the dangers of toxic chemicals in our everyday products, especially cleaning products, how they're linked to asthma and allergies and unregulated. And when I was 15 and my mom was 36, she was diagnosed with cancer and she's okay now. But at the time we didn't understand. And later, through my journalism work, it kind of clicked for me that I felt like that these products were making us sick. So I said to myself, what can I do to create right livelihood for myself and others while also providing an ethical service? And at the time, I was applying for jobs, but none of them really met my standards or values that I envisioned for an ethical business. So I decided to create my own. And I know what it feels like to be anxious and stuck in survival mode. And by that, I mean when the body and the nervous system are living in chronic states of stress. And so through my experiences of anxiety or codependency or people pleasing, I know what it's like to be there. And so these pivotal moments in college with my mom's sickness, with growing up, with relationships, in my trainings as a breathwork facilitator and a yoga teacher, I've learned so much that really have guided me into my mentorship business. My yoga teacher, for example, he is the Tony Robbins of yoga, Alexander Awakens. He's the greatest yoga teacher in the world. He told us that shame dies in the presence of a loving witness. So in other words, healing happens in community and with support. And with my mentorship or my women's retreats, I'm able to hold it all and give them customized roadmaps for their mental, emotional, and spiritual and professional goals. And that has really shaped my approach to business guidance, money, and spirituality.
Yeah, roadmaps. You doing a retreat? We doing a retreat. April 21st, y'all. Book your damn ticket now. Yeah. Right now. Because we're going to sell out by the time this shit releases. Yeah. For sure. But what, have you done a retreat before?
I haven't. I have taught at other retreats, but I haven't done my own yet. So I don't really have the date set, but it's in the process of formulating.
Yeah. For sure. No, yeah, that's a lot. You've been doing a lot. Is there anything that you thought you should have been doing that you ended up finding out wasn't worth it?
I think, so it's funny you say that, because I ultimately ended up selling the business, right? Like it was something that I was very passionate about. But after 8 years, I realized that while it was serving my community, it wasn't really serving me. And that was a really big lesson in, yes, seeing things through till the end. But also, if something doesn't serve you anymore, you can't put a price on your peace. You can't put a price on your mental health and regulating your nervous system. And so if something in your life is no longer serving you or your highest good, whether it's a home or a job or a relationship, an old pattern, a limiting belief, it's okay to let it go. It's okay to tell you, thank you, I love you, I release you. And it might be really hard or scary. And part of me wishes I maybe had done it sooner, but you definitely don't regret it when it leaves so much space and peace in your nervous system and so much space in your life for better opportunities to bloom.
And this is the cleaning business you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the one that I sold.
Well, it's all about pivoting too. And I'm sure you learned so much from that you can apply to your current businesses that make you feel more, you know, fulfilled and whatnot in what you're doing now. So exactly. Like there's different like stepping stones that you take through your journey. I feel like every entrepreneur I know has tried five, 10, 7 things. It just gets, you know, all the information that we learn, we just take it with us to the next thing that we're like, okay, this is going to be better for me. Thank you for the lessons. We're going to go on to the next thing. And it's built on your knowledge.
I was just going to say my one of my mantras are thank you for the lessons and the blessings.
Quickest way to turn a loss to a lesson is to get over it and get after it and focus on the growth and GYM and grow your mind. That's why I say it all the time. How are you going to be emotional resilient if you're stuck in your emotions? And how are you going to learn from anything if you're always worried about what you lost from it? And what the important part, when I moved to New York City as a partner with my uncle selling one liquor brand, that was one focus. That shit had to restructure. We had to refinance and everything. And then I was out here butt naked in the Big Apple with no fucking income. And I was like, oh, shit. Figuratively, obviously. I wasn't slanging my dick in Times Square. Okay. I obviously had pants on when I was out there. But I was butt naked financially with no idea what to do. And now I've been doing a lot of shit in the last 18 months. And now Revel's back. But you know, that was a temporary, I think that's where my spirituality kicked in was, all right, you by yourself now and you don't know what you don't know. So you got to keep the faith and keep moving forward. You know, I had to figure out what the hell I'm going to do. And so I just tapped into myself, reflected on all the skills I've ever acquired and started researching them and then researching business and researching personal development. Those go hand in hand and really just putting my mind into books and into other people who have done what I want to be doing and reaching out. Alyssa helped me a lot. You know, I got other mentors and, you know, I got Blessa with the superfood. She helped me learn a lot about nutrition. And you it's interesting when you figure out like what that gift or mission or what that value is, how shit just starts coming to you. If you think like, yo, I want to make another liquor company, you're caging yourself. Just because you came from liquor don't mean you got to go back to liquor. You know, take the traits that are applicable across the board from the liquor company and then filter them through, you know, what you aspire to do and then search all industries, same with religion, search them all. You get a big understanding of what the real truth is, you know, and same with yourself.
Yeah. It takes some time to kind of dissect what your actual purpose is and what your passion is. And sometimes I think people start certain entrepreneurial ventures or things and they feel like if they don't have like a burning fire right away that it's just like and this is why people don't succeed either, because they don't give things enough time to experience and explore whatever endeavor they're in could offer. Because for me, like, I started in entrepreneurship in 2018 with direct sales. And when I first started, I was, you know, it was 2018. My son was 1 year old. I just needed to, this is where I was focused on the money when I first started. I needed to make extra money to pay for daycare and, you know, my car payments, student loans and stuff. And I didn't want to work outside the home. But from that, I realized how much I got into the mindset. I started reading the books. I started to get into my spirituality because of that venture, even though it wasn't for me and I don't do it anymore. But if it wasn't for that stepping stone, I wouldn't. Now I'm, you know, in my membership, I'm coaching people through how to find their passion and their purpose and their spirituality. And so it's like, if it wasn't for that, I would have never found my passion, even though that thing itself wasn't the passion when I started. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just explore things. Let the things come to you, like Kim just said, because you never know what you're going to discover within the realm of what you're doing at the moment. It could turn into something that you don't even imagine.
You might not be the version for the life that you want right now. So if you get it right now, you might fuck it up. Mm-hmm. So just be patient, because you're developing traits in this adversity and the uncertainty that you're going to need when the opportunity presents itself, and you're going to be ready because you've been choosing yourself.
Yes. Speaking of your stuff, Bri, what you do is mentorship, and you help people with somatics and breathwork and nervous system regulation and coaching and all this stuff. So how do you blend the science back practices with the spiritual concept? How do you integrate the two approaches effectively?
I love being like leading people to the bridge between science and spirituality, because while some things have been like seen as woo, they have since been proven to alleviate stress or reduce cortisol. And I really prefer in my professional field being referred to as like a teacher or a guide, because I really resonate with the saying that a healer doesn't heal you, they teach you how to heal yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's more of what I do. And I give people the spiritual and scientific tools to alleviate their anxiety, their burnout, their chronic system symptoms, their limiting beliefs, etc. And then as a result, with the guidance that we do together, they can create a healthier mind and body, which leads to healthier relationships, businesses, financial freedom, or whatever their goals are. And as far as combining the two, I love to focus on practices, like I said, that are grounded in science, such as mindfulness, EFT tapping, nervous system regulation, and parts therapy, while also embracing the intuitive aspects of spirituality. For example, I believe in nervous system regulation, that the nervous system is the motherboard of our emotions. It controls all of our impulses, our body functions. But spiritually, I also believe that our aura is real, and that it's an electromagnetic energy radiating from our heart that surrounds our body. And I believe that our aura is an extension and a reflection of our nervous system. If our nervous system is anxious or dysregulated, then the energy around us is too. And so the more that we can clear, calm, and regulate our nervous system with these tools that I've mentioned, the more we not only think more clearly in the present moment, but the more we can clearly differentiate our anxiety versus our intuition and become a clearer channel to receive, like what you guys were saying earlier, intuitive wisdom, and to get back to our true essence before the stress and the trauma, and to better serve and give our gifts to the world.
How does gut health relate to your aura and your nervous system? Do you implement diet
in your I definitely, like, I'm not a nutritionist by any means, but I know that there's a lot of science between gut health, and they call it the second brain.
First brain.
The first, okay.
I'll say first. She's like, okay, sorry. No, I'll say first.
And a lot of our like serotonin and our body hormones and chemicals are built and made in the gut. So it really is determined by what you're putting in your body, whether that's vitamins, minerals, superfoods, drinking lots of water, like all of these things are interconnected.
All the bad shit too now. Can you kind of take us through like a session, a teaching of how to regulate a nervous system, or is that exclusively to book online?
I mean, people could book online, but also I'm happy to share one of my favorite ones if I'm feeling stressed or anxious is that I will like cross my arms over my chest and hug my biceps and squeeze my arms and just give myself a nice hug and then take deep breaths with that too. If you are mindful to have longer exhales than inhales, that signifies our body that now we're resting and that we can get out of fight or flight or anxious mode. So you can hug yourself or squeeze your biceps when you're feeling stressed. You can also close your eyes and take deep breaths. I also tell people that if your mind is racing or you're feeling like anxiety or panic coming, to close your eyes and breathe and bring your awareness to the space in between your upper lip and beneath your nose and feel the breath coming in and out of your nose. And in Buddhism, they call that the anapana breath, which is one of the easiest ways to get yourself out of your mind and into your body. And then scanning your body from top to bottom is how you can ground into the present moment, get out of your head, slow down the anxious racing thoughts. And then from that scan, you can have deeper practices of like digging deeper in the sensations of the body, feel it to heal it through the body as a channel for that healing outside of just talking about it.
Choose yourself, invest in yourself, man. Research this stuff.
Yeah, and we'll put your link in the show notes too. So if people want to work with you, they can. So if you're listening, make sure you look below the video and find her link. Hey,
y'all think it's woo-woo because you're conditioned to think so. Mm-hmm. Open your mind now because there's some true medicine out there that you ain't got to go to your doctor for.
I love a body scan. Like it just takes your thoughts off of whatever problems you have. And you're just thinking about each piece of your body, starting at your head to your nose, to your mouth, to your neck. And then you put your focus on whatever body part. And then you start to pay attention to the feelings that you have. If it's tingly, if it's hurting, it's like, wow, that's how easy it is to change your thoughts. Because people are always like, oh, I can't take my thoughts off of whatever's happening. It's like, okay, well, what color is my shirt?
White. White.
Okay. How fast was that to change your thoughts? You can change your thoughts immediately. You just have to really have the awareness around where your focus is and the awareness to shift it. So I love somatic stuff too.
No, I saw some 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Five things you can see, 4 things you can hear, 3 things you can touch, 2 things you can smell, 1 thing you can taste. You just go through that list while you're in the room. You can look around and then you become present. That's how you focus on being still and similar to a tree. Kind of still, you can't see it grow, but it's always moving.
Another quick one that I've been doing lately is if my mind is racing, I really just start to hum or sing. Because if your mind is racing, you're anxious, or like you said, you can't get your mind off this thing, give yourself a healthy distraction. And that can be humming or singing. And not only that, but it also stimulates our vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is like the motherboard of our nervous system. It's the thing that controls our emotional reactions and everything. So if you're thinking you're stuck in your head, just try taking a moment to bring awareness to that and just start humming or singing your favorite song. And I think that'll really help us bring us back to the present moment instead of whatever is making us anxious or depressed, focusing outside of ourselves.
The vagus nerve actually is how the brain and the gut communicate as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right down that nerve. So y'all take care of your gut and your brain and your vagus nerve, even when you go to Vegas.
I have heard that humming has really, there's something where when you're humming, you can't, it like shuts off some negative attribute in your brain too, or something like that. I forget exactly what it is, but really cool.
It's science and spirituality.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the most common patterns you see holding people back? Like how do you help them gain clarity around the patterns that they're kind of like stuck in?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot of universal patterns that we all experience, and a lot of them are limiting beliefs that we're not good enough, that we can't do it alone, that we don't deserve it. I also see a lot of fear of being seen, or the fear of what will people think of me? What if people judge me? I think that's a big one too. Another big one that's ingrained in our society, I think, is the glamorization of the grind or hustle or burning yourself out, seeing as like a status symbol. As a result, a lot of people have this limiting belief that we have to tie our value to our productivity or our income. And then as a result, a lot of people feel guilty for resting, or they don't know how to rest. and then they burn themselves out, or they overexert themselves, or they experience resentment, or all of the above. And I think that what I teach people is that rest is productivity. I help people find the balance between work and play. I help them gain clarity and release these limiting beliefs by teaching them to practice healthy boundaries around their work, around their screen time, around their food, around their family, and also the importance of prioritizing self-care and filling your own cup first, or choose yourself first. Like, how can you fill the cup of other people if yours is empty? So I really love to teach people how to resource and nurture the parts of themselves that have these limiting beliefs, the ones that are insecure or feel unworthy or unloved, and those unhealed parts that create these limiting beliefs that hold us back. And so I use parts therapy or EFT tapping, plant medicine, nervous system regulation, guided meditations to rewire or release these beliefs so that they can better heal their mindset, their body, and their nervous system to feel more whole, deserving, and worthy of whatever their goals are.
When it comes to fear, man, that's something I talked about in the Choose Yourself thing every week. Obviously, you know that. Be honest in it. Check, check. CYC, strongest dolphins in the sea. But it's an immediate switch of mindset. You fear change or you fear staying the same. Pick one and take action. Do you fear someone's opinion, or do you fear, you know, trying to be that version that you think they're going to like, which isn't you? Do you fear loss, or do you fear the possibility you might not gain shit? You know, work on detachment. Do you feel failure, or do you fear not learning from failing? Just switch your mindset in the moment, for sure. And I think, you know, when you can use fear as a signal for change or a signal for action, that's when you start to become truly authentic and passionate. But the value, everyone's value comes down to their health. I don't care what you say. You can't be valuable if you're not healthy mentally, because your intention ain't there. If you're not healthy emotionally, spiritually, you know, finances is last, I think. But your health, definitely mind, body, spirit, emotions, authenticity, and then god dang money, because freaking America's America, y'all. Balance. You said balance, work and play. You know, I'm about that balance. I'm a Libra. My birthday is actually tomorrow. It's at midnight. I'll be taking a shot. So that's my balance. But I say 80% healthy, 20% fun. I read the 80-20 principle. There's a lot of things about that being the balance of the universe. In order to, I think, for our bodies to be able to recover, you need to do four times the healthy shit than the toxic shit. Everybody's different, obviously, as well. You don't want to have 20% sugar if you're diabetic. If you've struggled with addiction and alcoholism, you don't want 20% being partied on the weekend. You might not make it out. So find your balance differently. Everybody's different. How do you explain balance to people to find their balance?
I think it really depends on the person, like what they're dealing with, whether it's their work motherhood balance, whether it's their relationship and business balance, whether it's trying to prioritize their job versus their passion project or their side hustle or their jewelry business or whatever it is they're working on. And it's just a matter of allocating time and prioritizing yourself first. And then knowing that with that, like, you just have to balance a lot of things, but always essentially choosing yourself first. And then everything else is better because you have done that.
Sometimes, especially since we're talking about entrepreneurship a lot too here, sometimes at the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey, there isn't really balance. Like, you might have to put in a lot of hustle at the beginning, what years one, two, because you have to have that foundation of that hustle to give yourself, let's say it's like 80-20 right now, or it's like 80% hustle and 20% rest. And then in 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 years from now, it could be 20% hustle and 80% rest. So you just have to keep that in mind too when you're building something brand new from the ground up. It's okay to hustle sometimes. Sometimes there won't be balance. Sometimes you do have to, right? I'm like, you added like the 17th thing to your plate. just added a new thing. But I just want to put that out there too, because I think it is important to have seasons of hustle, so that just so you know that in the future, there will be a time where you don't have to hustle at all. Because my goal is to get paid to exist, but I've already done the legwork. I've been an entrepreneur for 6 years. Like, I hustled my ass off at the beginning to build trust with my audience, to build a huge platform. I was putting in a lot of work with little pay for a long time, until now we're up to this point where I maybe work like 20 hours a week, and I'm in another transition period right now where I'm kind of switching what I'm doing. So I might have to turn the hustle back on for a little bit, but there's just going to be these seasons where it's like, sometimes balance isn't really a thing, but you do have to know when, especially if you're a mom, like I'm a mother, especially knowing when, you know, put the phone down for your family or put your business down for your family and have that relaxation. And like you said, knowing when to rest and not feeling guilty about it is also key, especially if you are in a season of hustle. Giving yourself the permission to rest occasionally is also needed.
Right. Like you're saying, like the balance can be seasons of hustle and then pockets of rest, or even just finding pockets throughout the day. Like ask yourself, what did I do for myself today? Even if it's one little thing, did I take a walk? Did I go to the gym? Did I make my favorite superfood smoothie? Like just finding little pockets of things that feel like balance for you, between hustling and building your dream, but also taking care of yourself.
Exactly.
Every time. Hey, it's going to take a lot of work in the beginning to start a garden. But after that, you just let Mother Nature take care of the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's having the awareness that it isn't going to be, you're not going to be in hustle mode forever. Like, you know, when I first started entrepreneurship, I was working 8 to 5. My son was 1 year old. I had an hour and a half round trip commute every day. So I would wake up at like 5:30 in the morning. I didn't have a morning routine yet. I wasn't like into the woo-woo stuff yet, but I was like put in that hour of work before I had to get up and get my son ready. And then 2 hours at night. So it was like 5:30 to 6:30 a.m. And then from 9 to 11 every night. And was it ideal? Was it fun? No, but it built my foundation. So now I was able to quit my job. My son, it will never remember me having to work outside the home. So it's like having that little bit of sacrifice at the beginning of something so that you're not going to have to it'll allow you to sacrifice less down the road. Because if you think about it, for me, it took me 5 years to build up to the point where I didn't have to work 40 hours a week or whatever. And it's like, what's 5 years compared to the rest of your life? You know, think about it in that way.
And the first 5 years of my business was nothing but work. It felt like mm-hmm. working 60 to 100 hours a week. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it paid off. Like now I'm, you know, I built that business from go mode. And now I'm grateful that I can build the next one for like that I am in my next one. And not in this sense of urgency, but in this sense of flow and knowing that money comes effortlessly, but also knowing that there, like you said, you have to build the garden hard at first. And I've definitely been there, so I know what it's like. And it's not easy for sure, but it's worth it.
Especially if you're building a garden in the concrete jungle.
Yeah. I think you just have to know, what are you working for? What is your vision? What is your long-term vision? What do you want your life to look like? Because the vehicle to get there doesn't really matter. Like if you know what you're working for, then, you know, whatever vehicle you're in, it might change. You might have those transitions like we were talking about. Like you start one business, maybe build it up to a certain point and then it shifts. But if you know exactly what you want in the end goal, that's what's going to keep you motivated to keep showing up every day. It's not going to matter how long it takes. There is no time limit. You work until you get to your dream or your vision. And then it's like, it doesn't matter the time frame. You're not going to put a time limit on it because you know what you're working towards and you're going to get there eventually as long as you believe in yourself and you keep taking action. And that's what I feel like true essence is, like knowing exactly what you want, being lit up for your goal and your vision at the end of the day, and taking whatever action you need to get there. So on that note, I wanted to ask you, what are some signs that someone is reconnecting with their true essence? Because you help people kind of go through this motion where they're finding what their passion is and all this whatnot stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, I think someone's true essence is essentially who they are or who they were before life experiences maybe created layers of limiting beliefs or insecurities that kind of keep our mind or our nervous system anxious or stuck or feeling unworthy. And specifically, my favorite modalities for getting to our true essence is through parts therapy, which is a type of therapy that suggests that we are all made of parts that can think, feel, and act differently from each other. And it's a scientific term, but it's almost like the spiritual term for inner child healing or ancestral healing. It's pretty much all the same. So for example, we have an inner child or an inner rebellious teen, an inner critic. And at the core of parts therapy, it's this belief that we have a self, or like you're describing, our true essence before the layers. And the purpose of this self is to harmonize and to bring compassion to and heal these different parts, transform these limiting beliefs, and integrate ourselves into a more true essence. In parts therapy, they say that you know that you're at your true essence when you feel the 8 C's, which is compassion, curious, clear, creative, calm, confident, courageous, and connected. And then the other signs are the some words like playful, patient, and present. And then for me, I also like to add pleasure, because I think we all deserve to feel pleasure in what we're doing, in the work that we're doing, in the process, in the journey, even when it's hard, still keeping your eye on the vision and finding pleasure and purpose through the process, even when it feels tough, even when you feel your inner critic being like, thank you, I love you, this doesn't serve me, and just further working on getting into your true essence.
I think, you know, that's definitely what we mean by choose your soul and choose yourself. Mm-hmm. We're all saying the same thing, is trying to strip down from the limiting beliefs, the conditioning, the program, and everything that we're taught we're supposed to be, and get back into purity.
Yeah. And I've heard people with your inner critic, because everyone has one, right? I'm just like kind of mean to myself in my head, but like in an inspiring way, like, it's like I talk to myself, like, come on, bitch, like just get your shit together. What are you doing? Which I know not everyone loves being talked to that way, but so I'm not really ever mean to myself. It's more like inspiring myself to take, like, put one foot in front of the other and just do the thing. But I know a lot of people will have an inner critic that is like really mean to themselves. They're so mean to themselves. So it's like, if you can name your inner critic something like Karen, like, thanks, Karen. Thanks for the insight. Not listening to you today. And just like understand and have the awareness around when you are having that negative self-talk or whatever, then you can separate it from your who you actually are to like something that's not helping your self grow. So if you have an inner critic, you should try naming it something, naming it a name that you're like.
If you're trying to identify and create the ability to control that critic, you got to put yourself in controlled struggles. Put yourself under pressure, cold showers, stretching, cardio, fasting, sprinting, heavy weights, because that'll increase the volume on that motherfucker. And then when you do another rep or you stay in there for another second, you're showing it that you're in control. And the next time that same voice and critic surfaces, you can identify it, because you just shut it down 7 reps in a row, 1 cold shower and 10 minutes of meditation. You controlled it the whole time. And now when the uncontrollables come in, you can identify that motherfucker. What's up, Karen? I see you. Chill ass out of here.
And a lot of recommendations I even give female clients is physical fitness. So I have a blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh,
ooh, shit. Damn.
And the reason why I did that is like exactly what you're explaining, is to like give my body, put my body in a state of fight or flight, or flight in this case, and then that you're able to like expand your comfort zone, expand your tolerance, your window of tolerance for stress, your window of tolerance for, you know, physical exertion. And then not only that, but afterwards you leave the gym or you leave the mat and you're like, yo, I just put that man in a chokehold. Like, I'm a confident badass queen. And so that is just another embodiment practice that I teach women. I'm like, go learn a martial art, hit the gym, hit the weights, like use breath work while you're doing it. Listen to music, hype yourself up, be your own hype man, and do what you got to do to make yourself feel as confident and powerful as possible.
One thing I love is inner size with exercise. Hit the GYM, grow your mind with inner size. Hit the GYM, grow your physical fitness with exercise. Get your ass on a cardio machine, walk incline, listen to a podcast or something you love. And that, I think, you know, releasing the dopamine, endorphin, serotonin, getting the clarity, the high level of oxygen to your brain, it gives you a higher ability to focus and getting deeper and more creative thought when you are exercising versus like distracted or in your bed or in your house. Like, get your ass into a point where you're actually up in, you know, the 100 beats per minute range. And you know, you'll be able to boost your creativity.
Yeah. And one thing I love doing on the treadmill is putting on a walking meditation. You can find them on YouTube, but then it's like you're walking into your dream life. Or I always put mine on an incline, so I'm like getting my heart rate up. But it's so magical that you can close your eyes, as long as you can stay on the belt. Obviously, you don't want to fall. But I really love doing that, because it's literally like you're walking into whatever reality you want. And then it really does something for your mindset and your programming too, and your subconscious.
Or put on the Choose Yourself podcast while you're at the gym.
Yes. Hey, I'm saying, put that shit on now.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the parts therapy, because I read that in your bio and I was like, what does that even mean? So you explained it. And I love that. But can you say the 8 C's again? I loved those.
Yeah. So they were compassionate, calm, connected, confident, comfortable.
That was the one I missed. Understanding that we all have parts. Can you explain how this parts therapy works into or ties into inner child and ancestral healing?
Yes. And I love this so much because before I even knew what parts therapy was, I loved inner child healing and ancestral healing, because to me, I think it really gets to the root of our issues. Like, a lot of the things that we believe or inherit, maybe they don't, it's not actually ours. Like, blocks or beliefs around money, not having enough money, or beliefs about not feeling good enough. Like, we not only can inherit like addictions from family or eye color, but we also inherit dysregulated nervous system and anxiety and chronic illness and limiting beliefs. I think that parts therapy is just like the scientific term for inner child healing. And inner child healing isn't just woo, it's actually rooted in neuroscience. So the amygdala is the part of our brain that stores emotional memories and trauma. And through practices like the self-healing, self-soothing, like the hug that we did earlier, or positive self-talk, guided meditations to repair in ourselves, we can rewire our brain using neuroplasticity, which is the idea that you can create new neural pathways or break old patterns and build new ones. It's like brain flexibility, and use that to calm our stress responses that we developed mostly in childhood through our attachment figures, through our parents, through our siblings, through our home life. And by doing that, we can resource those parts of ourselves that feel neglected or not good enough. We can integrate them as part of ourselves or as shadows. Those parts can often be shadows, like shadow work, and then just become better integrated into our true essence. And then we can embody a more confident, calm, regulated version of ourselves that create lasting emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual healing.
Makes sense. It all makes sense. How does psychedelics come into play? Because I was microdosing for the last year, since last August 2023, and it really helped me with my inner child healing, because it helped all these memories pop up that I was suppressing. So I'm like, I love this. I wish everyone would do this. And then I also did a deeper, like a hero's journey earlier this year. It was the Libra full moon. So exactly like 6 months
ago. Yeah.
By the way, personally, I don't like taking deep hero's journeys, but microdoses are so, so healing for me personally. They can enhance our healing process by facilitating like deeper introspection, like you said, bringing up old repressed emotions or memories that maybe we forgot about. I don't really recommend microdosing to somebody who's new at it or doesn't have a guidance or a teacher to lead them through it, because a lot of the time the microdosing can sort of just, at least for me and my experience with my clients and myself, is it can just kind of enhance or amplify what you're already feeling. And if you're already feeling anxious and then you microdose, it's not really going to help you unless you have the tools and the support to move you through what comes up. Through the guidance of a mentor or psychedelic assisted therapy, you can process these suppressed memories or emotions and making it easier to connect with different parts of yourself, which can lead to significant breakthroughs in therapy and lead to more profound healing and transformation. And for me personally, when I microdose, I feel like I am an extension of Goddess. Like, I feel so connected to the earth and like so lit up and inspired. It basically, for me, feels like I've put an iridescent filter over the world, and I'm not tripping, but I'm just like smiling harder, and I'm more motivated and creative and playful. And then that comes through in my hands and in the work that I'm doing and in the people around me and the effects that I have on others. It's a medicine. It's almost like a Wi-Fi router between you and your gifts. And it just really helps you clear out whatever might be blocking them, and then connect you better to serve and help others, or whatever the work is that you're doing.
Yeah, I fuck with microdosing, man. I fuck with shrooms. I fuck with marijuana. Fuck with liquor, but don't take too much, y'all. I've done that, but I think I took 10 grams one time.
A tenth of a dose. Like, you should really regimented, weighed out. Like, don't just find some mushrooms. Like, oh, this looks small.
Nah, yeah,
like,
don't do that.
Yeah. I agree with you, having the mentorship and the guidance, because I work with my girl, Nicole, for when I do it and things come up and we have scheduled meetings every 6 weeks or so to talk about what comes up in my life and how to integrate it. We do meditations and she talks to me and helps me kind of process the emotions that do come up because they do get more intense if it's, especially if you've gone through a lot of trauma in your life. Luckily, I didn't go through any type of abuse, like physical abuse or anything growing up or sexual abuse, but I know a lot of people have. And so if you're microdosing and then you all these repressed memories and emotions start coming up, it can be kind of crazy, like probably pretty hard. So it's important to have somebody there to hold that space for you to help you release it. So definitely something to note. Don't just do it by yourself, especially if you do have a lot of trauma that you're like underneath the surface. You need to have someone there to hold you through it so that you're not sitting there and I don't know, convulsing in a violent way. Right. So
cut your damn arm
and
off.
Go
I think
ahead.
You can microdose on your own, but like you have to do a lot of that work before. Cause like mm-hmm. I said, it can amplify and bring that stuff up a lot. And so the goal is to like maybe do that with some guidance. And then once you do that work, then you can continue to use it as a regimented medicine down the line after you've sort of processed and felt all of the things that were still stuck in your body.
Exactly.
Can't that be not being the same, having the same capabilities unless you have mushrooms? If you get too used to being microdosed, I just say this, there's a girl I know who does two of those deep journeys a month. She's done it for like 2 years straight. And she's like, I'll probably do it for the rest of my life. I was like, well, too deep. She's like, she wakes up, she has these crazy shit. She's fucking crying. I'm like, twice a month? You doing these things? Like you're going, having all these fucked up memories, like can't that be dangerous to be dependent on mushrooms and not be able to deal with life without them?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for her or her experience. It sounds like maybe, I mean, a lot of people have, you know, dependencies or addictions. I think that if you're doing microdosing mushrooms, same with anything, like have a balance and take breaks. They have very specific regimens that they recommend where it's like 3 days on, 4 days off, or 3 days a week. Or maybe do it for 3 months and then take 2 weeks off. So I think that everybody's journey is different, but like with anything, you could become dependent on them, but I don't think there's any studies out like that say, you know, how alcohol can definitely build up or like other drugs have a tendency to create synapses in our brain that we become dependent on them. I'm sure the same can be said for mushrooms for some people, but I don't think that's generally what happens. But I can't speak for that woman's experience. I would hope that anyone who does them finds a way to do them in a healthy, balanced way.
No, I mean, yeah. I've had sex one time on shrooms and I said never again because that shit was fire. I said never again. I'll never do it again because I'll be scarred if all I do is have sex on shrooms. And so, I mean, like you were saying, you got this filter on and you only function with the filter. Yeah. You take the filter off. For some people, it's still there. Like you're still kind of have, once your mind expands, it doesn't go back, but it can wear off though, for sure. So I think the on and off, I might have to give me some shrooms, but I ain't fucking on them.
I don't know about like doing hero journeys that often, like microdosing, I think is fine. Right. Cause I was doing it Monday, Wednesday, Friday for like a year straight. I think I would take a week off here and there, but it never, and I haven't had, I need to re-up on my I was going to call it prescription. It's not really a prescription. I haven't had them in like a couple months now, which I don't feel any, you know, I'm still more creative and more in flow and feel more productive than I did in the past before I started microdosing. Even though I haven't had them now for a couple months, I'm still feeling more creative and more in flow than I was prior to using them all the time, if that makes sense.
I think that mushrooms sort of like go into our brain and kind of like a mycelium network can go and like rewire our like attention span. Like I have ADHD. Microdosing can like reconnect our attention spans or our patterns and things that then become permanent even after we stop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't know about the hero doses often, which if she's having like crazy trips twice a month, and then if she has a lot of trauma to release and she's having those emotional outbursts when she
takes her like 2 days to recover.
Like, I don't know. That seems like a big commitment.
But plant medicine ceremonies, maybe like once a year, but each their
own. That's wild. But I don't know. I don't think she'll get addicted to any, you know, like, do what you gotta do. I don't think mushrooms have anything negative tied to them. Like you said, when it comes to like the addiction aspects, I think we're fine. I think she's fine.
I guess you can go try it, guys. Mm-hmm. But don't say you got it from me.
What advice would you give to someone who's experiencing burnout?
I feel like we've all had it. It's sort of where we're like running on empty or running on fumes, where we feel fatigued and unmotivated and tired. And often that is when our nervous system is in shutdown mode. So in nervous system regulation practices, you have three states of the nervous system: dorsal shutdown, which is where you feel burnout and tired and depressed. Then you have yellow or sympathetic, which is when you feel fight or flight or anxious. It's when we're mobile, we're moving, we're like, gotta go, 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 which is great. It's very productive and could be good. But most of us live in yellow, I think, in sympathetic. And then there's green, which is ventral vagal, which is when we're in flow state. It's when we're feeling connected and calm and our true essence. So I think for somebody who's experiencing burnout, I would say try to find things that make that bring you back into yellow and then bring you back into green. So move your way up the nervous system ladder, get yourself out of shutdown mode. And that often looks like prioritizing sleep, which I think Hakeem talks a lot about, prioritizing self-care, healthy food, gut health, superfoods, stay hydrated. I also recommend limiting screen time, maybe minimizing drugs or alcohol, minimize dysregulating things like watching the news, take space from people or places that put stress on your body, and set boundaries and limits to protect your time and energy. You can also spend time in nature, take your shoes off and ground with the earth. That sounds woo, but there is also scientific studies about
so many studies. I love it.
Putting your feet on the earth and spending your time in community. We heal in community. We don't heal alone. Our brain is wired for connection. So surrounding yourself with people who nourish you and inspire you and encourage you really brings you out of red state, burnout, back to yellow, back to green. Make time for the hobbies that take you out of fight or flight or anxiety and put you into flow. Ask yourself, what makes me feel calm, connected, and happy and confident? And make more intentional time for those activities. They could be like running, music, singing, dancing, exercising, making art, etc. Like whatever it does. And I would also recommend doing that first thing in the morning, like making 5, 10, 20 minutes first thing in the morning, so that when you wake up, you don't check your phone and you go from yellow to red, because then you're instantly anxious. Anything, if you start your day in fight or flight or in a state of anxiety, then little things like someone cutting you off or a really stressful work email could bring you into red. So if you start your day with activities and embody the feelings of being calm and collected, then little things will bring you into yellow instead of bringing you into red. And then just making intentionality around choosing yourself and making time and space for things that make you feel good.
I'm telling y'all, set the foundation. This is what I provide to people. Take time after your sleep, time before your sleep, and you eliminate toxins, people, and screens. Yeah. And you prep for sleep, and then you prep for the day. That's your time. That's your time dedicated to acquiring the traits you're going to need throughout the day. You can also add little 10-minute windows throughout the day. Do some breath work, do some meditation, reset. And don't be fucking with this time. You're like, oh, I don't have to go into the back, do breaths because I'm busy. No, go do that shit.
Because your production,
exactly. Your production after that is going to be exponentially more productive than if you were to keep skipping your resets, skipping your morning routine. You just keep skipping your sleep. And having that a comfort zone of discomfort, a comfort zone dedicated to growing, to being prepared to have to do things you aren't familiar with, is what gives us confidence and allows us to move and take risks, because you already did the work and filled up your cup. And now you can pull from an overflow.
I find any excuse, like if I want to feel good and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go outside and put my feet in the grass. I'm like the queen of doing that. It makes me feel amazing. And there's a science behind seeing the greenery, like visually seeing green trees around you. And then also the sound of birds singing, it like does something to your nervous system. And then also having your feet on the ground and then maybe even hugging a tree and putting your hands on the tree, it does something to your whole body. And I'm always calm. But I always am like, okay, if I even have a little bit of stress, I'm like, okay, I just need to take a break, go outside for 10 minutes. I come back and finish my stuff. And so it's totally worth it to do that. And there's the saying that if you feel like you don't have time to meditate for 20 minutes, then you need to meditate for an hour. Like you need to calm your ass down. Take the time to free your mind from the shackles of the stress of your life.
Like I love the morning, do it at night, make pockets of time, just really prioritize yourself. It'll like change everything around you.
I love what you said about the dorsal and the ventral, because that's what I talk about in the CYC. That's why the emoji is a dolphin, because it represents the dorsal cortex, which is the intention muscle, your ability to choose intention over emotion. And the best part, the best way to strengthen that is to increase your awareness, because you don't want to have to use it so much that you burn out. Like you said, the dorsal, that's the red, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is when you use it too much, when you're working too much and you're like intention, burnout. So it's like, understand your balance, understand your capacity, and understand how much you can actually exert beyond. Because it's still good to push yourself. Like, oh, I had a task list of 10. Let me do one more. Okay. But you ain't got to do 20 because you got a whole day left when you only prepared for 10. You work out your muscles too much, you're going to tear some shit. Now you're going back 7 steps. The dorsal is also your decision-making muscle that also can get burnt out. So, you know, just make time to recover and replenish. Starts with your gut.
Make time with rest. Prioritize rest. Rest is productivity too.
Yeah. I just watched LeBron. He spends a lot of money on his health, but he sleeps 6 hours and he takes a 2-hour nap in the afternoon. Non-negotiable. He's been doing that for 20 years and he's the longest, most productive athlete in all of sports for the longest amount of time. And he says, sleep is the key. He's like, fuck all that treatment, all that other shit. Sleep is the key.
I love nap time.
Sometimes I take like 20 minute naps, but I've meditated so long now, like it takes me about 5 minutes to get to sleep and then I'm right back up and I'm good. I'm not groggy or nothing. I'm like, zooted, boosted, if I don't sleep too long.
I love it. Well, we should wrap this up. Why don't you tell us how people can find you, how they can work with you, what kind of containers, or, you know, what is working with you look like, and give us your website and how people can tap in.
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram at embodied with Brie, EMBODIED with Brie. And like I've talked about, I just help people get into their body and out of their mind, out of their head. They can work with me in one-on-one mentorship. I'm also building a group container at the moment. This month I'm in the process of selling all my things and moving and downsizing from a 3-story house to a backpack, but, I'll be in groups.
Okay.
From there, I will be, I'm taking more clients once I get to Greece. And then once I'm there, building my group program, because I really, we're building a community. My clients now, we have an amazing group chat where we inspire each other. We have accountability for our morning practice, what makes us feel good, what gets our nervous system, what practices we're doing. And eventually, by next year, I'm doing women's retreats. I also teach at festivals on nervous system regulation, and currently have like speaking engagements in the works coming up in the field and other things like that. So you can find me online on Instagram. You can apply to work with me via the link in my bio or invitation. Just shoot me a DM and I would just love to chat about healing journey or your experience or anything that feels good.
Community connection, contribution. We're going to have you speak at one of our festivals. I've been dreaming about festivals, like hosting them for a while now. So you're on the list. Okay. Okay.
Going down. I've been doing festivals, organizing my own events. I'm like an event producer and a promoter also. Okay. And a performer.
Put you so. In my back pocket.
Yeah. I've taught at numerous festivals and just will continue to effort to do that and build, like you said, community and connection and wisdom.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for getting on. Everything that all her links will be linked below in the show notes if you're listening, and make sure you leave us a review if you found value in this. Follow Brie on Instagram, and thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, Brie. Set the foundation, y'all. Yourself to strengthen your soul.